This is Sports Saturday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, charging into our third and final hour here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City and across the Midwest. Cranking out 50,000 watts. You can get the app and listen worldwide at 810WHB.com. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bohlig is running the show, and it is getting steamy outside. The humidity is cranking up here in Kansas City, as you would expect, after getting a little bit of rain over the last couple of days. Royals won last night 7-4 in 11 innings. They'll play at 3:05 this afternoon. Glenn Sparkman against Max Scherzer. Not really hopeful about that matchup. Chris, do you have baseball tonight, today?
That I do.
Okay, 2 o'clock for baseball tonight with Chris Bohlig. And then Sporting KC played tonight at 7:30 against the Chicago Fire, Children's Mercy Park in KCK. You can hear that live here on Sports Radio 810, and you can get the postgame show, The Final Whistle with Dave Borchert, at right around 9:30. Right now, we're going to switch gears once again and talk a little college football. First time we've had this person on as a guest, Brian Fisher, who writes for NBCSports.com and AthlonSports.com. Brian, how are you on this Saturday?
Doing fantastic. Good to be on with you.
All right. What I always ask people who we haven't had on before, what part of the country that you work out of?
I'm in Los Angeles, which I think, as everybody knows, has been very unquiet the last 24 hours or so.
So what was that? We've only had small little quakes here in Kansas City. Not even really quakes. We get the aftershocks usually from like Oklahoma City. So I've been in a chair that's moved around and I've seen the floor moving, but very minor stuff. What was it like for you last night in Los Angeles as that 7.1 earthquake hit?
You know, I've been out here a little over a decade now, and that was the worst that I felt. It was just continual shaking, and really it wasn't necessarily the slight vibrational shaking that was concerning. It was the length of time that it kept going on, and then obviously you have that. You have some big news in the sporting world. It was just. Los Angeles literally was the epicenter of the news last night.
Literally and figuratively, you had the earthquake first, then you had the news at, 2 o'clock this morning, the Woj bomb that Kawhi Leonard signed with the Clippers or is going to sign with the Clippers. So, yeah, a little bit of everything going on. I was a little surprised, and I promise we're going to get to college football here, Brian, but I was really surprised that the Los Angeles Dodgers continued their game last night after that.
Yeah, it was wild to just see them continuing on with that pitch. And I know Joe Davis, who does a lot of college football for Fox later on, he's kind of flabbergasted that they kind of played through it. But I guess that's the life of a baseball player with 162 games, a little shaking, not going to knock you off your rhythm there.
I think most of the players said they couldn't feel it on the field or in the dugout, but the press box was definitely shaking and fans started running up the towards the concourses because they didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, if that stadium, I know it's in a ravine, I've been there a couple of times, but if there were any structural problems with that stadium, that's a lot of concrete coming down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it just kind of goes back to this region is used to it a little bit, but obviously every time it does happen, everybody kind of gets a little bit out of sorts because it's such an unnatural feeling to be kind of moving around with the ground underneath you there.
All right, our guest is Brian Fisher, NBCSports.com and AthlonSports.com, covers college football. And we talked a little NFL in our last hour, Brian, and we're still, and much like the NFL, college football is in a little bit of that dead period right now. The grad transfers are pretty much done. The camps aren't going yet, and so you've been looking at some interesting things to kind of fill the time and things to write about. Is that normally the case when you get to this time of year where you try to find, okay, this is interesting to me, maybe somebody else will see something interesting? I'm going to get to some of those things, but is that how you kind of look at it, like, this is kind of fun, I'll put this out there?
Yeah, this is pretty much a great vacation time because it's that kind of lull on the calendar. And I mean, we're approaching, I think it's 54 days out between the start of the season. We actually might be even less than that now. But I think you look at the calendar, you got conference media days coming up in the middle of July. That really is the kind of start of the unofficial start of the season. But, you know, it's such a weird year in 2019 for college football because you start earlier. We're starting on the 24th with some extra games, including that big opener with Miami and Florida down there in Orlando. And then because of the way the calendar shapes up, we have a couple extra Saturdays. So it's really one of the longest college football seasons coming up. So it's going to be fascinating to see how teams navigate that, especially because a lot of them have a second bye this year.
And if it means more football, ask any college football fan. If it means more football, they're fine with it.
Yeah, I am definitely not complaining about that. My wife might complain about it.
Yes.
come this fall, but I don't think anybody else is complaining about more football.
Well, one of the interesting stories that you put out there that at least I thought it was interesting was you put a head-to-head quarterback matchup list together. At least one side of it where it was an SEC quarterback, and then you had either another SEC quarterback or somebody from the ACC or somebody from another conference. And I just thought it was interesting to think about it in terms of the quarterbacks. And your number one matchup this season is September 7th, Texas A&M's Kellen Mond versus Trevor Lawrence of Clemson. And we know Trevor Lawrence is going to get all the attention in the world. He's going to be the Heisman favorite from day one. But Kellen Mond, he shows up on your list quite a bit.
Yeah, he had a breakout game, you know, last year in College Station against the Tigers. I mean, really pushed them, you know, the eventual national champions to the limit there. And I think having yet another offseason, you know, really a second offseason under Jimbo Fisher, not only learn that system, but kind of develop under a guy that has produced Heisman Trophy winners and produced big offensive guy, performers. I think it really is the sky the limit. He's a guy that can move around in the pocket. You know, he's got a very strong arm. I think taking it to the next level because there's going to be a lot riding on his shoulders. He may be, when you go through these lists like this and you look at some of the matchups that he has coming up, he might end up determining who the Heisman Trophy winner is, depending on how he plays, because he plays Trevor Lawrence in early September. He plays Tua Tagovailoa in October. You know, he plays Jake Fromm from Georgia. So he's definitely got his work cut out for him because Texas A&M, their schedule is absolutely brutal this year. And so that puts a lot of pressure on the quarterback. And I think Kellen Mond, if he can make that big jump under Jimbo Fisher this year, certainly makes the Aggies a lot more interesting than I think they would have been.
With a brutal schedule, how patient are Aggies fans going to be if this is just kind of a so-so season? Maybe you get to that sixth win and you get an average bowl game. Is there going to be patience for the Aggies to get this together? I mean, I guess they have 10 years on the contract with Jimbo Fisher, but will the Aggies fans be patient enough to wait and see how Kellen Mond and these kids develop?
No, I think they're firmly integrated in the SEC.
Right.
They understand that patience is a fleeting virtue down there in College Station. But, you know, I think that there is the understanding that, look, you know, the schedule is absolutely brutal. I mean, they're going to play probably at least, you know, four top 10 teams, if not more, throughout the season. And obviously, you're talking about some of the biggest of the big dogs in Alabama and Georgia and LSU and Clemson. I mean, those are, you know, four national title favorites right there. So, I think there's an understanding that schedule is brutal right there, but Jimbo Fisher was brought in and is being paid a lot of money to win some of those games. Now, they showed flashes last year. I think nine wins was a very good step in the right direction for that program under Jimbo in year one, but the fact of the matter is he was brought in there to win these big-time games. And if you're an Aggies fan, if you're going 1-3 or maybe splitting 2-2 against some of those big-time teams, you'll probably end up taking it. But I think there'll still be a little bit of anxious if you're sitting there at 7 or 8 wins at the end of the year when you kind of expected more in year two.
We're speaking we're speaking with Brian Fisher from NBCSports.com and AthlonSports.com. So Kellen Mond, you're saying, is going to have could have a say in who the Heisman frontrunner is, having matchups against both Trevor Lawrence and Tua from Alabama. What is Tua's situation right now? Is he's battled injuries, you know, recently, and sometimes Nick Saban will say things pretty critical of him publicly. I think that's just Nick Saban being Nick Saban. But how is he coming into the season right now?
You know, it's really been fascinating to see how Tua's, you know, offseason has been so much different from last year. I mean, you know, obviously you come off the high of of winning a national title. And you know, he had a terrific year last year. I think that's what a lot of people forget. It seems like everything has been colored by that performance against Clemson. Obviously, he was hurt a little bit in that Orange Bowl against Oklahoma, so he wasn't quite as effective. So that's kind of everybody's lasting impression was seeing him out on the field throwing that pick six against Clemson, just not looking as sharp as we were used to. Because you know, you go back to earlier in the year, I mean, that guy was the runaway Heisman favorite, and he was just picking apart defenses. I think health was a big factor in that. Obviously, when you're talking about you know, getting your lower body all set and making sure that it's prepared to throw. But you know, at the end of the day, he has one of the most dangerous wide receiving cores in the country. Obviously, you're talking about a national title contender from an elite roster standpoint there at Alabama, and some great coaching as well. So I think he's got some pressure on him, certainly, to win big this year, but I think he's perfectly capable of it, and I think everybody's sleeping on him a little bit because he does have that high-end talent that can win big-time games, that can lead Alabama to a national title, and it wouldn't shock me at all if he kind of comes out a little bit fired up from hearing a lot of this criticism based on really just two mediocre performances.
Motivation is a heck of a thing, and it doesn't matter if you're a 19, 20-year-old college kid or a professional athlete. If you can find the motivation, and I don't think he needs motivated, but if you can find that that burr under your saddle, so to speak, that's always a good thing to have. I was also going through your list. I was looking for some more local ties, and you've got a good matchup with Mizzou going down to Georgia, Jake Fromm versus Kelly Bryant, and we haven't seen Kelly Bryant play in a while, and it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with a new system at Mizzou. And he had the chance after the suspensions came down for Mizzou, and we'll see if they go through the appeals process and get those taken out. I thought it was poor form on the NCAA's part to just hammer everybody like that. But he could have said, no, I'm not coming to Mizzou, but he is committed. And it'll be just interesting to see how he fits in with a completely new team and a new offense.
Yeah, it's going to be a big challenge, I think, for Derek Dooley, because he is very different from Drew Locke. And I think the adjustments within the offense with Kelly Bryant running the show is going to be fascinating to watch. Obviously, you want to take advantage of his legs and being able to move around the pocket, take off and run for some first downs. But I think he as good as he was a couple of years ago in leading Clemson to an ACC title, really, and I think he was over 3,000 yards passing, nearly 1,000 yards rushing. You know, I think he's fired up for this opportunity this year, not only just to play in the SEC and try to test themselves against some good defenses, but really show that he's a good quarterback. And I think that's what a lot of people kind of forgot after having so much success with the Tigers and then kind of giving way to an even better quarterback in Trevor Lawrence. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, he's got some skills, position talent that he can throw to. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see this offense, especially Mizzou, kind of evolve from year to year.
And with Kelly Bryant, I just had a kind of a funny thought. When you cover Mizzou, obviously Mizzou had a great quarterback in Drew Locke, and we've been covering him here in Kansas City since he was 14 or 15 years old. Super kid, super family, couldn't be happy for him getting a pro opportunity. When you look at you look at Kansas and you look at K-State, the other two teams we cover, there are dry periods where some schools just don't get quarterbacks. And I remember when Trevor Lawrence, the word started to come out that he was gonna start right away. And I was like, wait a minute, they already have Kelly Bryant, and they've got somebody that's even better than that, and not only better, but maybe way better than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's life at a big program. I mean, look at Georgia. You know, there's the same example happening at Georgia. I think, you know, Ohio State a little bit in terms of having Dwayne Haskins, and then you got a guy transferring in Justin Fields. I think, you know, if you're one of these truly elite programs, you're recruiting 4 or 5-star quarterbacks every single year, not just from a depth you know, concern to make sure you have a backup that can really go out in the field and win you games, but you know, at the same time, you've got to have a field general on the field that can really make those big time throws. I think quarterbacks coming out of high school are really more prepared for the college game now than ever before. You know, when you talk about 7-on-7, when you talk about just the year round business of being a quarterback, it's just so much greater than even 5 or 10 years ago. These guys are coming in prepared. They're picking up these offensive systems very quickly, and I think that's why you're seeing some guys not only enter the transfer portal and find themselves somewhere else, but a lot of these young guys, they're coming in right away, and they have the confidence to not only win the job, but they have the physical, you know, skill set to do it as well.
You know, better high school programs and ready for college. And one thing that I really enjoy seeing is the National Football League embracing this style of football. At least some people are. Andy Reid has embraced it. Philadelphia's embraced it. Cliff Kingsbury is going to bring this to the Arizona Cardinals. And instead of, look, Brian, I got tired over the years of hearing, well, so-and-so was an excellent college quarterback. We got to break him down and start over and show him how the pro game is played. And now coaches are saying, you know what? Let's play the game they're used to because they're pretty damn good at it.
Yeah, and I think, you talk with a lot of these coaches. I mean, you go back to the days of Chip Kelly, you know, when he kind of took the world by storm, not only in the college game, but had that early success with the Eagles. A lot of what he was doing was still basic, football concepts that go back, dozens and dozens of years. And, there's a little bit of a tweak here and a unique spin there, and I think you're kind of seeing that at the NFL level nowadays. There are a lot more spread concepts being involved, but there's tweaks. There's uniqueness, I think, in the NFL game, and that's why you're having a little bit easier transition for a lot of these guys because, they've been throwing those hitch routes and those double post moves and a lot of that since they've been in high school. And I think the things are filtered down and they filter back up as well. And I think that's what you're seeing at really all the levels of football nowadays.
You're listening to Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bolig is running the show. Our guest is Brian Fisher, who writes about college football for NBCSports.com and AthlonSports.com. All right, one of the favorite offseason topics, I think, for a lot of people is the hot seat. Which coaches are on the hot seat right now? And at the top of your list, and I think this coach has been on the hot seat for a long time, actually, but Gus Malzahn at Auburn, who, you cover it closer than I do. He seems to me like a little bit of a different dude, but at Auburn, I think it's been long enough, right?
It's so funny because, he signed that massive $49 million deal, and then literally about 8-9 months later, he's feeling pressure on the hot seat. He's seeing articles about, is Auburn going to pay this buyout? And I think it's not only difficult because, Tigers fans obviously have that level of expectation. There's obviously the pressure of having a national title program in Alabama, across the state lines. And I think more than anything, what really is difficult for fans to kind of come to grips with, and I think the administration is coming around to it too. Gus Malzahn is supposed to be an offensive guy, and yet that's been where a lot of the inconsistency for the Tigers has been. You have a quarterback that obviously the New England Patriots think very highly of to draft, but not having a greatest of year, but maybe not a great system fit. They've had unique guys come through there that have put up some big numbers, but the consistency from game to game just really has not been there. It's been a labor almost at times for offense, at Auburn, and I think that points very squarely at the head coach. And so it's going to be a pressure-packed 2019 for Gus, and I think more than anything, he understands that. And he knows that, he has an AD now that he's working for that didn't hire him. He's going to have a new school president at some time, this fall. So I think there's he understands what the situation is. I think Auburn fans understand the situation when he's in. And I guess the good news for Gus is he's far from the only coach with a very hot seat
right
going into 2019.
Well, one of the other coaches on your list, and look, Brian, I'm going to have to confess, I don't watch a ton of Vanderbilt football unless they're playing Mizzou. It just hasn't been interesting, I guess, since James Franklin left. And when I read that Derek Mason was on your hot seat, I got to thinking, James Franklin's been gone for a while now. I had to remind myself of how long ago that was, but you're getting to that point where, okay, Vanderbilt struggled before James Franklin got there. They got pretty decent when James Franklin got there, and now they've kind of fallen back a little bit, but it's been a few years now, and Derek Mason has to figure out a way to get some more wins.
Yeah, and I think it's just the most difficult job, in the SEC when you add all the academics. Concerns that you have to get into school there. Obviously, the talent level that Vanderbilt is recruiting at is just so far behind. Even programs right now like Kentucky and Tennessee and others that continuing to pound that recruiting pavement. Derek Mason, OEC, has a difficult job. I think it's made even more pressure packed going into this year with a new athletic director who we've seen recently. If replace a basketball coach. Really right away. And I think that's the kind of the issue that he has coming into this year. Two bowl games are nice, but I think the level of expectations around that program did raise so far under James Franklin to show what is possible there. that it definitely hampers his successor in Derek Mason. And look, he's got to replace a lot. I think the defense is going to be a little bit better this year, but that's going to have to balance out because you lose guys like Kyle Shermer at quarterback. You lose a lot of offensive talent, and I think it's going to be fascinating to see how they can kind of navigate not only that SEC East, but some of those crossover games as well.
We're speaking with Brian Fisher from NBCSports.com and AthlonSports.com, talking college football. One more coach to mention real quick, Barry Odom at Mizzou. You got him as being in the safe spot right now. And, Brian, I don't know what the challenge is for Mizzou if the suspensions are still going to be in place where they cannot play in bowl games, which I think is ridiculous based on the information. They voluntarily gave their information to the NCAA. They said, this is what got messed up. We're going to, you know, do this. We're going to do that. And then the NCAA says, well, since you told us, we actually are going to hammer you pretty good. Whereas if they wouldn't have said anything, none of this would happen. But the challenge of getting kids motivated to play when there's no bowl game at the end of the rainbow, you might have a handful of guys with pro potential. I get that. Maybe some guys are in the last year of college football. I get that. But as a group together, to me, that would be an immense challenge.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue when you're dealing with that from a program standpoint is not the early games. It's not being competitive against the Georgias and the Floridas, those big-time programs that you're going to play on your schedule. That's all going to sort it out. You know, the team's going to come fired up. It's when you lose a couple early. Maybe you lose to South Carolina in late September, and then you follow that up by a loss to Ole Miss or something like that, or Vandy pulls an upset on you. How do you respond to those games, you know, kind of down the stretch, you know, when there is nothing to play for in November or October? That to me is the biggest challenge that Barry Odom is going to face with his team. And, yeah, that's when you start to see guys kind of look out for themselves a little bit more. I'm sure the coaching staff is going to be on guard for that. But at the same time, you know, when there's not kind of that carrot at the end of the stick for Missouri in terms of a bowl game, you know, you're going to have some of those issues. And I think we've seen that time after time when these kind of bands come down, these teams kind of slink away at the end of the year.
All right, a couple of final things for you. And this is, I guess, non-football related, but financially it could be very football related. You wrote a little snippet about Ole Miss saying they are not going to be selling alcohol, at least this season. And different schools are handling different ways because now the NCAA has said it's okay. But I did not realize how difficult it would actually be to implement because, look, when I'm in a press box, usually it's on the same level with the luxury suites, and you can see all the alcohol being carted in there and the big money donors are taken care of. And so my initial thought was, oh, okay, we'll just go down to the concession stands, open up the tappers, and everybody can have a beverage if they want to. But the regulations involved, whether it's, you know, getting I don't know how liquor licenses work, if you have to get an expanded one, but you got to get the government has to come in, they got to sign off on a bunch. It's not as simple as just saying, okay, now you can sell beer. There's a lot more that goes on into this.
Absolutely, and I think that's why you look around the SEC, even though that rule passed in the spring, I think you're seeing everybody kind of take it slow. I think they wanted to have that first step of, all right, well, now we at least have the option to. And I think there are schools that were obviously prepared, like Texas A&M, that came out and said, all right, we're opening up the taps. But and, you know, I think they had kind of been looking at that, doing that for a while and anticipating this rule change. Others are obviously going to take it slow. I think Ole Miss, a little bit of a different case because they have an interim AD right now. I think that complicates things, everything that's going on with the school. Obviously, you have state regulations there that are a little bit tighter than some of the other areas. So, you know, yeah, it's a massive, massive planning process. And I think you talk with administrators around college football, you know, I think the average fan really has no idea, you know, the amount of planning that goes on just for a single football Saturday at school, whether it be police presence, whether it be obviously the staffers for, you know, security and concessions and all that. And then you add on to that not only, you know, expanded retail presence for things like alcohol and beer and all that, but obviously you're talking about, you know, crowd control, that sort of stuff, in order to at least, you know, prevent some of the big incidents that I think everybody is fearful of. But, you know, at the end of the day, look, it might not happen this year, but I think eventually, you know, across the SEC, especially at Ole Miss and in places like that, you know, next year, you know, 2020 and beyond, I think it's going to be pretty commonplace, you know, in every college football stadium where you can walk up and get a beer if you're of age. And I think everybody's going to not really think too much of it because everything's going to be in place for all these schools, and they thought through everything that they need to do.
Hey, Brian, I want to thank you so much for your time today and getting up on a Saturday, especially with the earthquakes in your neck of the woods last night. First time we had you on the show, outstanding. I liked all this stuff, and I've been reading through your stuff on NBCSports.com and AthlonSports.com. Just really good stuff, and I hope we can get you back again. How many days did you say, 54 until college football?
I think it's right around there. We're a little over 50.
All right. Well, we cannot wait, Brian. Enjoy some of the little time off you have left, and we'll enjoy what you're putting out there between now and the opening of the season.
Absolutely. Good to be on with you.
All right. Thank you very much. That is Brian Fisher, NBCSports.com, AthlonSports.com. If you want to follow him on Twitter, let me spell the name. It's Brian Fisher, but it's B-R-Y-A-N, and then a D, and then Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R. Brian D. Fisher. Good stuff. I'm happy he still came on after the earthquake last night. It didn't sound like it did any damage, but he said it wasn't necessarily the power of it. It was the sustained time, the longevity of it that kind of scared him a little bit. Like I said, I only remember a couple of them a year or two ago when Oklahoma City had theirs going on and felt the chairs move around in the room or the floor move a little bit, but nothing like that. Nothing like where everything's shaking. So glad he's safe. Glad everybody else is safe. And glad he was still able to come on the show. So good stuff from Brian Fisher talking college football. 54 days. We'll take a quick timeout and then more Sports Saturday. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. Oh, who is this, Chris?
This is the Pixies.
Oh, this is old school then.
This is the Debaser, yeah.
Yeah. Should have known that. It has a very Pixies kind of sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
So.
Good stuff last segment with Brian Fisher, too, NBCSports.com. We've never had him on before. And Chris, I got all the guys from NBC Sports and CBS Sports that you get on the show. They've all been great.
Yeah, they do a great job. So we actually have another one on tomorrow, Nicholas Mandola, to preview Women's World Cup.
And he's been on with us before.
Yeah, he's been on with us. So he's been writing a lot of articles and covering that. So that'll be good stuff to get you ready for the big match tomorrow morning.
We'll also have Jarrett Sutton on the show tomorrow at 10:30.
Oh, yeah.
Talking
that'll
about Kawhi Leonard going to the Clippers.
Yeah, that was the Woj bomb last night. That was
that was as big as it gets.
Set things off in California.
Well, I like what Brian said because he lives in Los Angeles, and that's where he was calling us from. And he said, yeah, we were literally the epicenter of the United States last night with the actual earthquake and then with Kawhi Leonard sending shockwaves across the NBA by signing with the LA Clippers.
So an updated thing on that.
I was going to say, are there any more Woj bombs in the last few
minutes?
Well,
they said the Raptors didn't have the assets draft-wise to send what OKC wanted. So that was one of the reasons. And one of the reasons they didn't do it as well was because they didn't know, even if they did that they thought that Kawhi was going to stay.
Right.
So they weren't entirely sure that even if they put that trade into effect and got Paul George and Russell Westbrook, that Kawhi would stay in Toronto.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
his heart was definitely in LA. Like, he wanted to be in LA. It was pretty apparent, even though he did, of course, win a finals in Toronto. And it was a great town, a great basketball city, and people get behind that team.
Yeah.
Home is where the heart is, and he wanted to be in LA.
Well, I will say this, because I always think about money in different ways. California has some of the highest state taxes in the United States, and Canada's even more. So I guess he saves a little bit of money. I don't know why. I always think about things like that. So there you go. The Woj bomb that kind of set the world on fire this morning. Not last night. This morning, like 2 in the morning it came out. Anyway, good stuff from Brian Fisher talking college football. If you missed that, you'll be able to get on the podcast later today at 810WHB.com. Back in the 10 o'clock hour, we had our good friend Matt Derrick on the show from ChiefsDigest.com. We talked Chiefs football. We talked training camp. We talked Seinfeld. We talked NCIS. Just a Beastie Boys. Red Fox.
All your pop culture.
Man, to tell you what, that was fun. That was a fun half hour, just kind of getting off course a little bit. It's okay. That's why I like listening to Josh Briscoe. If he was on at night or we do shows together like we did this past week. Our subjects kind of move all over the place. It's fine. It's good. In the first hour, the 9 o'clock hour, we had David Leske on from Baseball Prospectus and Royals Review talking about
The Royals marathon 11-inning win last night against DC.
That's not what's going to get people, especially in my age group and younger, attracted to the game if they aren't so already. Because who wants to sit through 4 hours and 40 minutes, even if it is your team, even if you do support this team?
Unless you're on your way to a championship of some kind.
Yeah, and even at that, 4 hours and 40 minutes, and that was a sloppy game. That baseball game was sloppy
it was
and
ugly.
Not well played.
No.
There was 416 pitches, 16 walks between the two teams. Yeah.
Royals pitchers issued 11 walks. I mean, that's ridiculous. I get that there were, 11 innings, but 11 walks?
It's not what you want to see.
And they did. If you walk 11 batters and still only give up 4 runs, that's unusual.
Yes.
You should get punished worse than that. You should be hammered for that. Oh, do you have something else to add?
I mean, I know. And 19 left on base
for Washington?
The Nationals.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, give credit to the Royals pitchers for in high leverage situations. When they needed it, they got the outs. I mean, you could say
got
that.
Got some ground balls.
But Brad Keller labored. Mm-hmm. He had 61 strikes. He had 111 pitches and 61 strikes.
And 5 2/3, too.
Yeah, and that ratio is not very good.
No.
Strike-to-walk ratio, not good.
Not great.
And he had 5 walks.
Yeah.
And that was something he had been doing well with, because early on in like May and stuff, he was really struggling with his command.
Yes.
And it kind of reverted back to that last night. So, I mean, granted, you'll give him one here and there, especially with a team he's not familiar with. They don't play the Nationals often because, of course, interleague play. But and the Nationals have been extremely hot. They've been very good.
They'd won 4 in a row going into that game last night.
Yeah, I think last 13 they've won as well.
Since like the beginning of June, they're like 28-5 or something like
that. Yeah, they've one of the best records since June.
Yeah, well, they have the best starting staff.
Yeah, their starting staff is really good. And they switched pitching coach. They were talking about it on the broadcast last night. They had just switched pitching coaches in late May, early June.
Right.
And since that time, their staff has just been phenomenal.
The Nationals switched pitching coaches and things improved?
Interesting.
Just saying. Things make you go, I don't think we're going to get 4 hours and 40 minutes today with Glenn Sparkman on the hill for the Royals versus Max Scherzer of the Nationals. Now, maybe it will get dragged out. Maybe Glenn Sparkman will get knocked all over the ballpark because the bullpen's going to be thin today. Ian Kennedy is not going to be available today. I don't have that confirmed, but he's pitched 2 days in a row, and he's thrown a ton of pitches.
Said after the game last night that he did not want to use a lot of the pitchers he wanted. They really stretched out their bullpen last night, and in the first game of a series, you do not want to see that.
Well, this could also be a game. We have the term take one for the team. Sometimes if you're a starter and you have a bad day and you give up like 5 or 6 runs in the first inning and then a couple of more and people are saying, why don't you go get him out of the game? Sometimes you got to wear it. You got to own it. And you're just going to have to get out there and throw till you can't throw anymore because we don't have enough bullpen guys. It happens.
Well, and props to Keller for even after giving up that home run in the first to Turner, he got you 5 2/3, and it wasn't pretty.
It wasn't great,
but he got you 5 2/3. And there's also a different dynamic too when you have to. You don't have a DH,
right?
So
that
puts a little twist into things.
Yep,
it's not these pitchers aren't used to hitting,
right?
Of course. So
years ago, Vin Mazzaro was starting for the Royals. He was a fun guy to be around, by the way. And he gave up a ton of runs early, and he kept looking into the dugout like, are you getting me out of here? And it was one of those days, like, no, we're not getting you out of here. And the relationship between the Royals and Vin Mazzaro soured very much so after that. It happens. Today's the day. If Glenn Sparkman comes out and stinks up the joint today, he's going to have to wear it. That's just the facts of life. Because you got to be realistic about what you can do, what this team can do, what this Royals team can do against the Max Scherzer. Now, David Lesky did tell us earlier, maybe the one guy, and look, anything can happen, but the one guy that may have a good shot is Jorge Soler, because Max Scherzer likes challenging hitters with his fastballs. And Jorge Soler likes depositing fastballs 490 feet away from home plate. So there might be a chance. Now, David Lesky set the over-under on the number of times Royals hitters will strike out today against Max Scherzer. And let me look again. Max Scherzer is on 170 strikeouts this season with 22 walks. David Lesky set the over-under for Royals hitters at 13.5 total. So which
is pretty high.
Are you taking the over or taking the under?
I'll take the under. I'll say he'll have 12.
Okay. If I were gonna set the over under, I would have set 11.5. But since David put it at 13.5, since you're taking the under, I'll take the over.
14?
Yeah.
Okay.
And our wager will be the satisfaction of knowing who's right and who's wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Another interesting note just from around the league last night, Minnesota hit their 160. They now have 165 home runs.
Right. They're crushing it.
And they had 13 extra base hits last night. Incredible.
Good Lord.
Slapping the ball around the park.
Well, and I was getting. See, we were talking about it yesterday when I was filling in for Seren. What you've seen Cleveland do the last week, especially after sweeping the Royals, they were 9 games out about a week and a half ago, and now they're 6 games out. And so I thought, okay, maybe this Cleveland team can make a run. Maybe the Twins got a little fire under their ass.
Well, yeah, and you got to think at some point that the Twins will slow down a little bit. Like, some guys will go on some slumps, but it just hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And this team just continues to rake. Even though I'm still a little spotty on their pitching.
They need bullpen help.
Taylor Rogers is their only consistent piece in the bullpen that you can really rely on to go get you outs when you need them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be fun in the AL Central, like going down, you know, into these later months, into August and September, to see what happens, especially with the Indians playing so well right now.
Yeah, it'll be just those two. It won't be anybody else. I've not checked the National League Central today. That division is going to come down to they might need extra games at the end. There might be a double playoff at the end. No, it'll sort out before then because they'll play against each other. But that's a fun division to be following right now.
Brewers are 47-42.
Okay.
Cubs are 46-42. A half came back, and the Cardinals. 44-42, 1.5 games back. The Pirates are 4 games back, and the Reds are 4 games back as well.
Wow.
So everyone in that division is – there's not a clear above and beyond
right.
team
right.
that is 10 games up.
Right.
They're all pretty, you know, mashed together.
Right.
There's not too great of a distance between one team or the other. It's all pretty close.
I guess if you root the story that makes you feel the best, I'll go with the Brewers just because, you know, with Lorenzo Cain and Mike Moustakas. By the way, Lorenzo Cain had a couple more highlight reel catches this week. Every time I see him on a top 10 play or, diamond this and diamond jet, web gems, whatever you call it, it still stuns me he has not won a gold glove. I mean, look, I love the fact that Salvi has a stack of them. I love the fact that Alex Gordon has a stack of them. But how seriously is this award taken by whoever decides it that Lorenzo Cain has not won a gold glove? It's hard for me to take that seriously. I'm happy when guys get it. Like Christian Bale says, good for you! But the fact that Lorenzo Cain does not have a gold glove, whatever. So, yeah, back in the American League Central, Minnesota and Cleveland's going to be fun. Cleveland, you know, Clevinger looked pretty damn good the other night against the Royals, and he always has. What is he, 7-0 lifetime with like a 1.5 ERA? But they're getting him back. They're getting other pieces back. The one guy who may come back later in the year, and I was actually stunned when I read the story, Carlos Carrasco is fighting leukemia.
Yeah,
I guess a month.
It's pretty sad.
Yeah, a month or so ago, he wasn't feeling good, feeling sluggish. They went to do some blood work, and they said something's different about your blood, and he's got leukemia. And he told a reporter down in the Dominican this week what was going on, and he thinks he can get back this season. I don't know anybody who's had leukemia. I know plenty of people who have other forms of diseases and cancers and things. I don't know how people respond from treatments for leukemia. But man alive, that's brutal news. I mean, you're in the prime of your career. You're a professional athlete, and look, I understand it happens to everybody. I'm just saying it caught me off guard when I read it. But maybe he comes back at the end and helps for a push. I don't count Cleveland out of anything. Not at all.
No, Corey Kluber's still going to come back in late July or early August. So that is a Cy Young winner who has a lot of experience and he knows how to get it done. And that's a frontline starter that you'll put right back in your lineup.
Mm-hmm. All right, we are coming up on a timeout here. When we come back, some final thoughts as we get ready for Sporting KC tonight at 7:30. We've got Women's World Cup final Sunday morning at 10. You've got Copa America going on at, I believe, 2. And you have the U.S. men in the Gold Cup finals against Mexico at 8.
And you got Wimbledon.
And Wimbledon going on.
I watched it yesterday. It was awesome.
Yeah, that 15-year-old kid, Coco Gauff.
Yeah, she that was a phenomenal match.
I saw the interview she did, the sit-down interview she did this morning on ESPN. Just what a nice
kid.
She's
a great interview. Yeah. She's handling it all really well for a 15-year-old.
The sponsor on her headband is New Balance.
Oh, yeah.
They are going to be... I bet the agent will have some renegotiations to talk about after this because they're getting about $1 billion of advertising.
New Balance is really hitting it heavy right now with her and then having Kawhi Leonard, too.
Oh, yeah.
That is... Hey, New Balance, get on the New Balance hype, all right, guys?
There we go. All right, quick timeout. We'll come back and wrap things up. You're listening to Sports Saturday. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig's been running the show. You're on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Final handful of minutes here on Sports Saturday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City on this Saturday, July 6th, 2019. My name is Brad Porter. Chris Bollig has been running your show today. After we are done at noon, Chris is still hanging around because he's got baseball tonight coming up at 2 o'clock. Get you ready for Royals Nationals.
Yes.
Max
Royals
Scherzer.
Nationals, Max Scherzer against Glenn Sparkman. Mm-hmm. Are you pumped for that?
Absolutely. That's appointment television right there.
That's appointment television. More so on the Max Scherzer side.
Yeah. Max Scherzer's a fun player to watch. So,
no, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like,
I have no expectations for this game about the Royals, so I'll just enjoy Max Scherzer, the former Missouri Tiger. Once again, thanks to our guests who joined us today, David Leske in the 9 o'clock hour talking Royals baseball, getting us ready for today's game. On the 10 o'clock hour, Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com, joined us to talk about the Chiefs and everything else. And we just wrapped up with Brian Fisher from NBCSports.com talking college football. If you missed anything and you need something to listen to while you're, working in the yard or working on the deck or whatever you want to do, just go to 810WHB.com, and those will be available through podcast. So got big plans for today, Chris, after you get done with baseball tonight?
I think I have another family thing. So I have a family thing on Thursday after I got off work.
Okay.
The station, and then another family thing today. So
well, I was kind of
be this busy.
I don't know if I can actually pull this off, but so yesterday when we got done with when I got done doing Seren's show, we decided to take the kids out to play some golf. Went over to Heart of America, played the rock course. Little par three over there, nothing fancy. You know, you don't have to wear a collared shirt. You don't have to, you don't have to dress like you're going to a country club. It's a place to hang out, play some golf, have some fun, no pressure. And all the people over at Heart of America are great. Love it every time I go over there. And it wasn't that hot, but it was super humid, so it felt like you were playing golf in a sauna, which is fine. And then we had a great dinner afterwards at Corner Cocktail. But I've been trying to think for the last few minutes, can I pull it off 2 days in a row? Playing 2 days in a row. I always feel kind of guilty if I do that.
Why?
In fact, I don't know if I've ever done it.
Why do you feel guilty?
I don't know. It just seems because, I don't know, the impression of golf is this pampered thing, but this is not that place. The rock course at Heart of America is not like
that.
I mean,
if you enjoy it, then do it.
I think we've done it in Colorado a couple of times. There's a par three out there where we play, and it's kind of similar to the rock course at Heart of America a little bit, so... I'm gonna have to think about it. I got
nice
the angel.
Out.
The angel says, "No, you have other stuff you need to get done." The devil says, "Go play,
have fun, enjoy life."
Have fun.
That's what I always say. I mean, You gotta take the time when you can to relax.
Yeah. We got a good show lined up for you tomorrow at 9:30. Nick Mendola will join us. We'll talk Women's World Cup. We'll talk Men's Gold Cup soccer. We'll talk Copa America, and we'll probably recap Sporting KC a little bit since they play Chicago tonight. Also, we'll be joined by Jarrett Sutton, friend of everybody here at the station. He does every single show. I think he's on almost every day on somebody's show.
He's crazy. He's awesome.
But he'll give us some insight into the Kawhi Leonard signing with the Clippers and the Clippers trading for Paul George and giving away a boatload of draft picks.
The madness.
The madness.
That is NBA free agency continued and will continue. It's the most entertaining sport in terms of
the
offseason.
Yeah. And the drama.
It just continues. I don't know what it is. The allure, the movement.
Possibilities
in the age of 24-hour news cycles and low attention spans, mm-hmm. the constant movement keeps people intrigued.
Right,
in my opinion.
We don't have much time left, but do you think the NBA offseason and the drama is more interesting than the regular season? Not talking about the playoffs. Not talking about the championship. Is what's going on now? What's been going on for the last 2 and 3 weeks? Is it more interesting than the NBA regular season?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
I would say that wholeheartedly. I mean, I think they're both NBA and Major League Baseball regular seasons are very boring sometimes,
monotonous.
Especially if your team isn't good. Like if we had an NBA team and they were good and it was fun to watch night in,
that'd
night
be different.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But sometimes you get in the lull, especially with 82 games, and then
that's
162 games. It's sometimes a little bit much.
That's why Josh Briscoe brought up the idea earlier this week when we were on a show together of the possibility of the NBA coming up with a midseason tournament of sorts and eliminating some of the regular season.
Well, they were talking about that, I think. The NBA was
eliminating some of the regular season games. I don't know. It's interesting. Might as well talk about it. So one thing the NBA's got going for them, they'll talk about anything.
They're always in the news about something.
If you've got a good idea.
Good or bad.
Send it to the NBA because they will at least.
Any publicity is good publicity.
Absolutely.
As they would say. But
yes.
I don't know. We'll see. I just hope that at some point either NHL or NBA team comes to Sprint Center. But I know it's probably not going to happen because of all the concerts and all the money they're making off that.
Yep.
Instead of having a team that might not sell out every night for 82 nights. Or not 82 nights, but 41.
We'll see. Back tomorrow from 9 a.m. to noon. Once again, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you to Chris Bohlig. My name is Brad Porter. Enjoy the rest of your day. Baseball tonight at 2. Sporting KC at 7:30 right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.